This is the examination of the hidden human condition.
You're listening to the Hidden Killers podcast.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
We are having a conversation right now, an ongoing conversation with the author of the book, While Idaho Slept. J. Reuben Appelman is with us on the program. With what he's alleged to have done, killed those four students brutally with a knife, do you think this was something that was planned out for quite some time? There's a lot of, you know, questions into that area about, you know, was this just I'm feeling this rage, I'm going to go in here at this time? Or, you know, had he been stalking these girls? Had he been finding ways of learning their patterns and things of that nature, and then finding just the right night to go in? It kind of makes him look pretty smart if that's the road he went down. But is it, though? I think that's another big question, because it seems rather rageful, rather impactful. And almost, it could be, you know, you think of crimes of passion. They are typically spur of the moment. But I don't know that this was a crime of passion. He certainly had a lot of motivation behind it, and probably the hate for women behind it. But what, you know, did one day he go, I'm going to do this, I'm going to go kill these women at some point, I'm going to figure out how to do it? Or was this more of a, hey, I'm free tonight, got a knife, let's go do this?
Yeah, I think based on everything that I read, and the people I talked to, and the all the research that's out there, it seems a little bit of both. You know, it's hard to deny that what the police and prosecution have laid out has got to be accurate to some degree. His vehicle being in that area many times, you know, and there's a lot of talk of chatter about, well, he doesn't have his phone doesn't have to have been in their driveway to have pinged the towers that service their house. And that's true. But he was definitely in that area quite a bit at night. It looks as if he, even if he wasn't stalking, I mean, this is, this is personal. I'll tell you, based on private investigative work, you know, I've done a lot of surveillance in certain areas, daytime and nighttime. And there is nobody on the road in certain hours of the night, except for drunks coming home. And I'm talking 3 a.m., let's call it.
Sure.
Drunks coming home, or people up to no good. And that includes me as a surveillance investigator. Like, if I'm out somewhere at 3 a.m. in my vehicle, blacked out at the end of somebody's drive, you know, that's not necessarily a kosher way of living. But I'm doing it because the job requires it. But I can see what's going on in the world at 3 a.m. and so can everybody else that's out there. Mm-hmm. Anybody who's out at 3 a.m. is really up to no good. Now, if you're just driving around because you can't sleep, okay, well then you're probably not driving around a residential neighborhood. You're getting on the highway and you're taking a long drive or whatever. It's suspicious as hell to just be circling in residential areas at 2:30, 3, whatever mm-hmm. it is. If you're not coming home from the bar to go home, you're up to no good. I know, because I've been out at that hour many times.
Sure.
doing work. So whether or not he was stalking those particular people, he was prowling through the darker corridors of his mind and impulses at those times, I would say. Mm-hmm. But what happens with this case, it's so interesting, because it also does appear, though, at the same time, that he planned these murders because they were unable to find, as far as we know, any DNA of the kids in his vehicle. Mm-hmm. So but they found his DNA at the crime scene, right?
Yeah.
So if they found his DNA at the crime scene, then let's pretend that a jury is going to put him there, because they're in 99% of the time they're going to. If his DNA is there, they're not going to believe that the police lied and planted evidence or something, or that the knife sheath was left some other time, or that somebody else, you know, killed these kids and pinned it on him. It's Nobody's really going to believe that. Mm-hmm. So let's pretend for the sake of this discussion that he left his DNA at the scene on that knife sheath that was found. So he was sloppy enough to do that. Yet no DNA of any of the kids found in his vehicle after viciously murdering four people in a very short amount of time. There would have been blood everywhere. So his ability to have cleansed all of that somehow from his vehicle is not likely. What really probably happened is that he was covered up, and that would in a way that he could shed before re-entering his vehicle, or that the vehicle itself was covered up on the interior, plasticked, or whatever it is. And look, you know, that takes a certain amount of planning. So it's just unlikely that, I mean, it's hard to get blood evidence out of a car.
Sure.
It's hard. And yeah, he had a lot of time before he was arrested, but, you know, man, it's real hard. And the thing about it is that he made so many mistakes. Like, if he's going to stalk the area, he's smart enough to know about cell phone data and things like that. It doesn't make any sense that he would have kept his phone on him during those things. So here's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
During those previous recons or whatever you would want to call it. Here's what I'm getting at. It feels like he was a night stalker type prowling an area and then spontaneously decided to murder these kids, but had prepared for the eventuality of doing something like that. Mm-hmm. If he was going to murder somebody, he knew how he would do it. He knew how he would get away with it. And I'm not saying that he did it on a dime's notice, but I am saying that he may have decided to do this one or two or three or four days before, mm-hmm. not the month before when he was just driving them around. Who, we don't know. You know, he could have just been stalking in general, because if he knew he was going to do this crime, it feels, you know, for a month ahead of time, it feels like he would have left his phone at home every time he was doing recon.
Yeah.
But he didn't.
Yeah. One would think, I mean, that seems to be an ongoing theme in the last year or two of people realizing exactly what your cell phone can tell everybody, no matter what you delete or take off of there. One of the bigger things that we don't know about this yet is his Google searches, his internet history, or any of the data that's on his device. I'm imagining that will come out in court. But it's almost as good as Google, and that would be the questions that he posed online while he was working on that research project, almost seemingly asking, you know, he did literally ask criminals to chime in, how did you feel while committing this crime? What was bizarre about those questions is it was from a mindset of that it was a heinous crime that he was asking people about. It wasn't just, I stole from the store, or I beat somebody up, or whatever it may be, something that would be more of a minor offense. The questions were very much in depth, trying to almost identify what do other people feel when they do this sort of thing. And I think it references back to his visual snow and the things that we learned about with his writing, where he didn't seem to be able to feel. And I'm wondering how much of that is the reality of this is someone who doesn't feel much and has to keep going to new and further lengths to feel anything. And was it murder that he thought, maybe this will help me feel something? Obviously a very dark way of going about it. Maybe go get some therapy and figure out some ways to strengthen that muscle, if you will. But I do wonder how much of the planning and how far back that goes of wanting to know how he should feel, almost like needing a guidebook to his own emotions while committing and after committing a crime.
Yeah, there's a lot in there. You mentioned the Reddit posts where he was surveying criminals, allegedly in association with his master's degree from DeSales, or his master's thesis, mm-hmm. I'd say. But he was asking, like, how did you feel at the moment of committing the crime? Things like, how did, if I'm remembering it right, it's obviously it's written down, but I'm trying to remember. But it's talking about adrenaline, or mm-hmm. How did your emotions overtake you, or whatever? which is really interesting because that's one explanation for why he made mistakes, why he would have left the knife sheath with a drop with a bit of touch DNA on the sheath at the scene of the crime. You know, what people say, how did that happen? Why, that's so stupid. It must be a plant, or it must be he's a moron or whatever. No, man. Have you ever killed anybody? I mean, I haven't, but I'm sure the adrenaline is bonkers.
Yeah.
You know, there's no way to control. I know that I'm a relatively agile, fit guy who I have a black belt in Taekwondo. I've been physically fit my whole life. It's a way of like living for me, but that doesn't mean jack all, because one day at the pool, I saw somebody having a seizure and I froze. I didn't know what I was supposed to do. I just stood there for about 20 seconds while somebody else ran over there and helped the guy. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't know how we're going to react with adrenaline. Like,
sure.
I'm supposed to run over there immediately and I didn't, right? Mm-hmm. So when someone like Brian Koberger is in the middle of murdering four people, who knows what's happening? And that seems to be what he was asking in those Reddit posts.
Yeah.
Add to that the thing you mentioned, how he said he doesn't feel anything.
Yeah.
He was talking about that in other online posts. And yeah, man,
I mean, it makes you wonder if the not feeling something allowed him to do this. I mean, certainly adrenaline would be pumping, I think, regardless, just being a human being. But if that adrenaline is not registering to him, it makes you wonder, was that, you know, part of what allowed him to kill four people in such a heinous way, and nobody being able to get away? I mean, just the logistics of it by itself also are troubling, because you wonder, how did someone managed to pull this off, even in the most well-trained, well-fit situation that one could be in?
Yeah, I want to add something to this Koberger picture that I know you've done a lot of shows on Koberger, and I want to add an idea that's not super popular, probably. I want to preface it by saying that I am heartbroken and appalled and so empathetic about what happened to these students. It's horrific. And I have, once you reach a certain level of horrific action in your life, I can't have sympathy anymore for you. Right. So, mm-hmm. If it turns out that Brian Koberger did indeed commit these murders, then I believe that whatever happens to him is probably after his conviction is probably the just thing. However, that said, all of this stuff, when we talk about Brian Koberger's problematic youth, he and all the emotional problems he's dealing with, and all of the sort of just the effed up things in his life in general, he didn't start out. And we talk about not being able to feel and wanting to feel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he didn't start off life this way. I say this all the time. Brian Koberger was a child, like all of these victims. He was 2 years old, 3 years old, 5 years old, wearing footy pajamas, waiting for somebody to give him a snack, waiting for somebody to tell him what to do, waiting for somebody to tell him it was bedtime, and had no idea that this is what his life would become, full of rage, full of embarrassment and shame, full of the urges for violence. Assuming all of this is real. Mm-hmm. And it's heartbreaking for me in that regard as well. Brian Koberger was just a kid like everybody else when he started off in this life. And it's a sad thing when lives turn toward this kind of violence. And I feel sympathy for his family. I feel some amount of sympathy for the broken child that he was, you know, and it's horrific to think about. Nobody starts life thinking, oh, I think I'll go kill some people 25 years from now.
Sure.
You know?
And looking through the prism, it obviously it doesn't excuse any actions. Everybody needs to take responsibility for their own, but it certainly, like I said, it goes back to the recipe of all the things that happened to one person by choice or not. and you end up with the individual that comes out of it. But yeah, I mean, he's a human. There should be some humanity there. But I would agree too, if this is in fact what he did, that's not a person that's safe to live amongst the rest of society. There are just broken people out there that, yeah, everybody starts out as an innocent child, but sometimes we'd find out as they get older, there's something seriously wrong with this person. And, you know, in a lot of cases, hopefully they can get the help that they need. Obviously, in this case, he did not.
Yeah. Yeah. Your analogy about the recipe, I like that. There's definitely a recipe for these types of people. If there's a cook in that kitchen, I'd like to know who it is, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know who's cooking, but there's definitely a recipe that makes some of these people.
Sick of the ads?
We are too.
Start listening with no commercials now and get access to all of our episodes in advance of everyone else.
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
True Crime Today Premium Plus.
Sign up now.